Good afternoon and welcome to Audio Journal. This is Eileen and with me is Vicki, and we're reading to you today from the Audio Journal studio on West Boylston Street in Worcester. And to begin the program today is Vicki.
The first article we're going to read today is from the Arts, Culture, and Travel section of the Sunday Telegram, and it is an article about, entitled Mark Cecil's Bunyan and Henry Puts New Twist on American Folk Heroes. In Mark Cecil's epic adult fairy tale, Bunyan and Henry, or The Beautiful Destiny, the two heroes, Paul Bunyan and John Henry, follow the twisty path that hopefully leads to the beautiful destiny. Cecil, who grew up in Worcester, had to decide whether to take a journey on his own twisty path. That was, for me, a metaphor, Cecil recalled during a recent telephone interview. I had this job. I felt I was treading water and waiting for my real life to begin. He quit the job when he was 40 years old to write fiction full time. He and his wife have four children. His wife, Dee Dee Oraka Cecil, encouraged him to make the move. Now a real-life beautiful destiny will be realized when Cecil, who currently lives in Sherbourne, returns to his hometown of Worcester for an author event at 7 p.m. at the Tidepool Bookshop on Chandler Street on behalf of Bunyan and Henry, which was published March 26 by Pantheon, a division of Penguin Random House, and has already received some very fine notices. The book is his first published novel. Cecil grew up in Worcester and went to Venerini Academy and graduated from St. John's High School in Shrewsbury. I think it's going to be amazing, Cecil said of appearing at Tidepool. If quitting his job to write was a bold move, Cecil also moves quickly to set up his creatures and characters in Bunyan and Henry. Set, quote, a long time ago in an age of monsters and mystery, quote, the first paragraph introduces us to a magical creature called a Chilali. The Chilali loves someone at a crossroads, Sue Bunyan tells her son, Paul. This is a new spin on American legends. Paul Bunyan, the legendary American lumberjack, comes to a crossroads soon enough in Cecil's telling. With a sick wife, a load of family debts, and eking out a miserable miner's life in Lumptown, a bleak hamlet controlled by industrialist El Bafo, he goes on a quest to find a cure for his wife's illness. Bunyan meets John Henry, the fabled man of steel, who here is a fugitive on the run from a rigged, racist prison system. As Bunyan and Henry strive to reunite with the families they love, they work together on the, quote, twisty path to the beautiful destiny aided by the Chilali, who speaks in questions and a guiding light called the Gleam. These are wonderful but quite audacious propositions to place before a reader and ask if he was concerned if people would buy the mythology as well as buy the book. Cecil recalled that he was at a book event recently with thriller novelist and Boston television reporter Hank Philippi Ryan. She's writing in a genre, and it's totally clear what her genre is. She said this book, Bunyan and Henry, is a risky book. It's unique and it is so different, Cecil said. My book, for better or worse, is extremely unique. It's a blessing and a curse. You can say it's a compliment, but for a marketing team, it can be challenging. I say you have to write what you wish you could write. This is extremely interesting to me for a lot of reasons, and I hope others will agree. We'll see. Cecil said he was inspired in part to write his tale because he loves classical mythical stories, especially the Epic of Gilgamesh, a 4,000-year-old odyssey from ancient Mesopotamia about the adventures of the king, Gilgamesh, and his friend Enkidu. Two friends go on a quest. America really doesn't have a myth like that. Why not tell the story of Gilgamesh with Paul Bunyan and John Henry? This is not your typical bedtime fable. Matthew Quick, author of the Silver Linings Playbook, states that Bunyan and Henry is a hopeful Mark Twainian nod to brotherhood that puts the fun in profundity, even as it remixes American myth to the most sobering beats of our modern times. Cecil is friends with Quick and his wife, Holden native and mystery writer Alicia Bissett. Quick wrote the Silver Linings Playbook while living in Holden. The couple now live on the Outer Banks. He, Quick, has really been a good friend of mine and like a mentor to me, Cecil said. While Bunyan and Henry is Cecil's first published novel, it's not his first novel. He has said he has written several others and regards them all as part of a learning process. I'm putting in both feet. I was always writing, he said, at St. John's High School. He wrote the school's literary magazine. He majored in English and American Lit at Brown in Providence, and after graduating, worked as a reporter for the Pawtucket Times. Later, he was a reporter and an editor for Reuters News Service in New York, San Francisco, and Boston. He has also been the general manager and vice president of a boutique media firm in Manhattan. Currently, besides writing fiction full-time, he is the host of the podcast, The Thoughtful Bro Show, where he conducts author interviews with writers, including Quick, and head of strategy for a literary social media startup, A Mighty Blaze, an organization of 35 professional creative volunteers connecting writers with readers online. Bunyan and him, excuse me. Bunyan and Henry was about 4 years in the making, Cecil said. It's been a long road, but we got there in the end. He worked on the novel 2 years before he brought it to an agent. The book went through a number of revisions, including with his agent as well as his editor at Pantheon. When he quit his regular job, I said, that's it. I'm putting in both feet, as they say. His wife is a wonderful woman, and she knew his is what I wanted to do. She gave me the push. Araka Cecil was working, so the family was able to make ends meet. Even so, there were some really dark moments there when I nearly gave up, Cecil said. If you're an artist, there are 1,000 reasons to give up every day. At the time of the interview, Cecil was waiting for the reviews of his first published novel to start arriving in earnest. All my friends say don't look at the reviews. Whether they're good or bad, you can't control it. However, he said, some I've seen have been terrific, and it's been very satisfying. Could Bunyan Henry be one of those books that finds its way to the big screen? Well, that can be a twisty path, but that would also be a nice destiny. There is some discussion about this, Cecil said. I do try to write in a clear, accessible way. Because of its mythical nature, it would probably be an expensive movie. Nothing is settled yet. Meanwhile, Cecil said he's excited about coming back to Worcester for an event at a bookstore with his own book. He once worked at a secondhand bookstore in Worcester. I think we'll have a decent crowd, he said. His parents, Tom and Patsy Cecil, still live here and are recruiting people for the event. His father was a math professor at the College of Holy Cross, and his mother taught music in the Worcester Public Schools. He has two brothers. He is also expecting to see some school friends at Tidepool. It's going to be really cool. It's going to be very meaningful to me to be back in Worcester for that evening.
What's your vision? People with disabilities adapt on a daily basis. They're people you want on your team. And we're here to help you find blind and visually impaired professionals to help you reach your organizational goals. Building an inclusive workforce where individuals with disabilities are welcome is possible thanks to Mass Commission for the Blind. Partner with them to hire individuals who are blind or visually impaired and reach your workforce goals. The success of your organization depends on the diversity of your team. Call 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/mcb to learn how you can become an employer partner for the blindness community. That's 1-800-392-6450 or mass.gov/mcb. What's your vision?
Our next reading comes from the Sunday Telegram, from the editorial section, and it's by Ray Mariano. Cabrini teaches lessons about today's immigrants. It's not the kind of movie I would typically go and see. It doesn't star Liam Neeson, Al Pacino, or Keanu Reeves, and no one is wearing a cape dressed like a large bat. But I knew the story of Mother Frances Xavier Cabrini, and the movie trailer that I watched seemed interesting. So on a rainy day, I took a chance and went to the theater to see Cabrini. I'm glad I did. More than once, the movie had emotions bubbling to the surface. At some points, I felt anger. At other points in the movie, I could feel tears welling up in my eyes. Born in 1850, Mother Cabrini repeatedly asked the Pope for permission to go to China to minister to the poor. Instead, the Pope sent her and seven other nuns to America to serve Italian immigrants. When she got to New York, she found a destitute immigrant population who were being treated like animals. At every turn, she found roadblocks because the people that she sought to serve were seen as subhuman, called vile names, and expected to live apart from the good people of the community in conditions barely suitable for livestock. Even the local Catholic Church lined up against her simply because the people she served were viewed as undesirable. But Mother Cabrini was undaunted. By the time of her death, Cabrini and the devoted group of nuns that she led, the Missionary Sisters of the Sacred Heart of Jesus, had founded 67 schools, hospitals, and orphanages to serve the sick and poor across the United States, Latin America, and Europe. Following her death, Mother Cabrini, who had become an American citizen, became the first U.S. citizen to be canonized as a saint by the Catholic Church. Today, she is considered the patron saint of immigrants. But Cabrini is a story about a remarkable woman and the Italian immigrants who she served in New York City. As I watched the movie, I thought of my grandfather and the stories that I had been told about the names he was called, Dago, Wop, Greaseball, and worse. It's a story shared by the fathers and mothers of many of my friends who can trace their heritage to Italy. But it's also the story of immigrants from Ireland, Poland, and so many other countries who crossed the Atlantic in search of a better life. They were treated poorly, called vulgar names, mocked, and considered undesirable, subhuman. As I thought about the movie, I thought about the way we talk about and treat new arrivals to America today. Yes, I know some people will say that many of today's immigrants are different because they came to America without the proper documentation. I understand the concern. But I would point out that many of the immigrants who came to America before 1917, Italians, Irish, Polish, Greeks, and others, came without official papers either. In fact, the American Jesuit Review theorizes that Mother Cabrini herself most likely arrived without formal immigration documents. The Immigration Act of 1917, also known as the Asiatic Bad Zone Act, was intended to prevent undesirables from immigrating to the United States. The act also formalized documentation required of immigrants. Most of the immigrants who built America were considered undesirable when they came here. They were desperately poor, often illiterate, with only the most meager of belongings. And as someone might say today, the countries they came from were not sending their best. When our ancestors came to America, politicians and some journalists stereotyped them as inferior and out to steal American jobs. They were thought of as criminals. Sound familiar? But a closer look paints a different picture. The U.S. Department of Justice compared the criminality of undocumented immigrants to native-born U.S. citizens. Their current findings show U.S. citizens are greater than 2 times more likely to be arrested for violent crimes, 2.5 times more likely to be arrested for drug crimes, and over 4 times more likely to be arrested for property crimes than unauthorized immigrants. Other studies produce similar results. But this column is not being written to justify the crisis at our country's southern border. Almost everyone is forced to admit that the border is a mess and that we need to get it under control. And I'm not writing to suggest that we should just open our border and let anyone in. But the crisis at the border does not excuse the way we talk about those who are desperate to live here. The anger that I felt watching the movie when I heard the vile names American leaders and citizens called Italian immigrants is anger I feel listening to today's debate. The deep sadness that I felt watching those poor, desperate people living in squalor in the movie is the sadness I feel today watching immigrants sleeping on the sidewalk. Regardless of what you think about the immigration problems that we face in America today, the people who come here seeking a better life are not animals. They are people desperate for a better life. Sure, there are some who are criminals and they should be deported immediately. But the overwhelming majority of them came here desperate for a better life. America was built on the backs of the poorest of the poor, the least educated, and the most desperate. Today, some of their descendants torment new arrivals with the same disgraceful language and behavior that their forebears faced. If our grandparents and great-grandparents could see and hear us, they would be ashamed of our behavior.
The Worcester Regional Transit Authority, also known as the WRTA, is a regional transit system that services the city of Worcester and the surrounding 36 communities in the central Massachusetts area, with a bus fleet that includes all-electric buses, as well as many diesel-electric hybrid buses. The second-largest regional transit authority in Massachusetts, the WRTA offers reliable, comfortable, and safe transportation for traveling to work, shopping, school, medical appointments, and leisure activities. The WRTA also provides paratransit service for the elderly and disabled, as well as a variety of special services for those groups in the entire service area. For more information, visit the website at www.therta.com or call 508-791-9782.
Our next article comes from the AARP Bulletin of April 2024. It's an AARP Prevention Guide for Fraud 2024. It's never been more pervasive what to know and how to fight back. Operating out of every corner of the globe, criminals are bombarding older Americans with emails, phone calls, texts, and letters, all trying to steal as much of our money as possible. Consider that 2.6 million Americans, roughly equal to the population of Chicago, reported losing roughly $10 billion to fraud last year. And that's merely the reported cases. We would argue that given its pervasiveness and cost, consumer fraud represents the largest crime spree in the history of our country. For several years now, we've turned over the April edition of the bulletin to fraud coverage, as there always is so much new information to report. But our message remains hopeful. Law enforcement and private businesses have never been more engaged in the fight against fraud than they are right now. The real secret weapon against fraud, though, is you. Being aware of what is happening and knowing the red flags of scams when dubious offers come your way are the very best ways to put a successful end to this crime spree. Here's some fresh ammunition to help you and all older Americans defeat those foes. These are six fast-growing scams that are coming your way. Criminals are using the latest technology and a whole lot of creativity to come up with fresh ways to steal from you. These newly minted frauds are on the rise right now. Number one, check cooking. In recent years, check washing, in which thieves steal paper checks from mailboxes, wash the ink off with chemicals, leaving the signature, then fill in a new amount and payee, was the big concern. Now it's check cooking, in which thieves take a digital picture of a stolen check, then use commercially available software to alter it. It looks very real, even with the watermarks and all, explains Michael Brummer, Vice President of Data Breach Resolution and Consumer Protection at Experian. Criminals can then print a new phony check or deposit the altered image using a bank's mobile app. How to stay safe? Learn how to pay bills and send money to loved or trusted ones with electronic transfers from your bank. If you truly prefer to mail paper checks, drop them off directly at the nearest post office rather than using a neighborhood mailbox, and continually monitor your checking account for suspicious transactions. Number two, voice printing. Through technological advances, thieves can capture a recording of your voice and then use a software program to generate an imitation, quote, deep fake version that lets them impersonate you. That voice print can be used to access your insurance or your financial institution, Brummer says. In particular, crooks have been using deep fake voice copies to call banks and request that funds be transferred to an account they control. Excuse me. So how do you stay safe? Well, first of all, accept that the days of phone conversations with anyone other than family or close friends are coming to an end. If someone outside your circle needs to get a hold of you, they can text you, Brummer says. He warns that even calls that appear to be from known numbers could be coming from a phone that's been stolen or had its SIM card cloned. Number three, celebrity impersonation. During the pandemic, fans became accustomed to a constant social media presence from celebrities. Scammers have tapped into that. You're on Instagram or Facebook, and someone pretending to be Celine Dion or her manager reaches out to you, explains Amy Nofziger, Director of Victim Support for AARP's Fraud Watch Network. The fake manager might say, "Celine loves your comments. She'd love to talk to you. Here's her private account." After you connect, the talk gradually turns to how the celebrity's fortune is tied up in a lawsuit and she could use a loan. stay safe. If you get a direct message from someone claiming to be a performer or a superstar athlete or their agent, be extremely skeptical. It is almost certain to be a scam. Number four, multi-stage grandparent scams. Okay, so this is a new version of the classic grandparent scam in which an imposter pretends to be a grandchild in trouble who needs instant money for bail, a car repair, or something else. In this more organized approach, criminals staff call centers with young people who are paid a few bucks for every older person they can deceive. Part of the gimmick is for the imposter grandchild to provide a case number. When grandpa calls the supposed authority, they say, "Oh, do you have the case number?" Explains Aaron Foss, former chief executive and founder of NoMoRobo. It is a subtle psychological trick to make the fraud seem more credible. Some scammers have a co-conspirator pose as a courier and go to a grandparent's home to pick up the money in person, according to Steve Baker, a former FTC official who publishes the Baker Fraud Report newsletter. How do you stay safe? Well, if someone calls you from an unfamiliar number claiming to be a family member in trouble, the Federal Communications Commission recommends that you hang up, then call or text the family member's number to see if the person is actually in trouble. If they don't answer and you're concerned that the emergency could be real, contact other family members or their friends. Number five, delayed action sweepstakes. Those con artists who call or write to say that you've won a fabulous fortune have come up with a new variation. Instead of trying to get you to pay taxes or other fees in advance to collect the non-existent prize, the scammers will ask for personal information so that they can validate you and set up the payout. Then, instead of quickly looting your bank account, the crooks may write small checks on your account to see whether or not you notice the fraudulent activity. If you don't, they'll continue to use the account to obtain credit cards and lines of credit in your name that they can siphon off, giving them a potentially bigger payday down the road. How do you stay safe? Well, there are extremely few legitimate sweepstakes with large cash prizes. If you get a call claiming that you've won one, the safest bet is to just hang up and never, ever provide any personal information to them. And finally, this is a new one, Paris Olympics scams. With the Paris Games coming up this summer, experts predict a revival of the fake emergency scam, which works like this. A scammer hacks someone's email account, and shortly after, all that person's contacts will receive the same message. Something to the effect of, "Hey guys, I'm over in Paris for the Olympics and my wallet got stolen. Can someone please help me out by sending a gift card or a Venmo deposit?" It's a potentially convincing ruse. How do you stay safe? Resist the urge to react immediately if you hear from a friend in Paris or anywhere needing instant cash. Instead, try other ways to contact the person who supposedly is in need, such as calling them on the phone.
Would you like to hear news from Bolton, Harvard, Hudson, and Marlborough that you're not likely to hear on commercial television or radio? Then tune into Audio Journal every Thursday at 3 p.m.
Our next article is from the Sunday Telegram as well. It's titled Past Times. A show of many hands are on display at the Willard House and Clock Museum. It's in Grafton, Massachusetts. For three generations, the Cheney family has been fascinated by the passing of time. Robert C. Cheney followed in the footsteps of his father and grandfather, both serving as official timekeepers for the city of Worcester and spending his 35-year career as a clockmaker, dealer, conservator, and consultant for more than 50 museums around the country. His face may also be familiar to those who watch PBS Antiques Roadshow, as Cheney has appeared several times for more than a decade. My father was the official timekeeper of Worcester, as was his father before that, Cheney said. Part of that job was making sure all of the timepieces throughout the city were running correctly and to the second. He was also responsible for looking after the clock and the City Hall clock tower, basically the Big Ben of Worcester. Cheney said the clock high in the tower needed to be wound twice a week. And when he was a little older, he and his brother began helping out their dad. In the 1960s, Cheney's father would take the boys to the Willard House in North Grafton in an effort to save the building, an original clockmaking workshop founded by the Willard family. He originally wanted to have the property restored and physically moved to Old Sturbridge Village. The home was built in the early 1700s by Joseph Willard and remains one of the oldest buildings in Grafton. Joseph's grandsons, Benjamin, Simon, Ephraim, and Aaron, would all end up having a hand in creating some of the first clocks in the Willard collection. Inside the small workshop, Simon would create what he called his improved timepiece, now known as a banjo clock due to its shape. By 1781, Simon moved his workshop and clock business to Roxbury, where a plethora of artists, cabinet makers, metal workers, and painters were available to help create the magnificent clocks. While Willard's footprint in Roxbury no longer stands, his original workshop in North Grafton remains locked in time. I remember running into this room, Cheney said, standing in the center of the original 1718 workshop. I was chasing a chicken, and my father was taking measurements for some paperwork he had been filling out to save this place. And that's when I fell through the floor and into the dirt basement. I'll never forget it. Enter stage right, Dr. Roger and Imogen Robinson. The couple crossed paths with the Cheney's father, and they, too, shared the passion for saving the historical house and its importance for the early Industrial Revolution. The Robinsons restored the home, opening it to the public as the Willard House and Clock Museum in 1971, featuring the world's largest collection of Willard clocks. The museum features the original workshop with ancient original tools lining the tables and the faint tick-tock of dozens of clocks echoing in the hallways. Cheney now sits on the board of the museum and has been instrumental in keeping the hands of history's timepiece ticking within the museum's walls. Throughout his 35-year career, Cheney said, he has been self-employed, restoring and dealing clocks far and wide. And it was during this time that his path crossed with Charles Grichard, who worked in the oil industry and developed a love for Willard clocks. I like to say I made him a millionaire, he said with a chuckle, but of course he used to be a billionaire. These clocks aren't cheap. Over time, the friendship between the grew stronger, as did their love for the Willard clocks. Now, thanks to Grachar, the museum will receive a gift value at more than $15 million to transform the space into a world-class destination. This is going to double our footprint, said Robert Gierczyk, director of development at the museum. We're currently working with a Worcester-based architect to look at expanding the space so we can not only house some 90 additional clocks, but store them. The plans also include a small auditorium, a horological library, and an educational space for lectures and workshops. Before the museum can receive the gift, it has to raise $3 million for an endowment. Walking through the small house museum, as the hour turns from 1259 to 1300, visitors are met with a concert of chimes, only to be doused out once more by the constant tick-tock of time. These pieces are each their own time capsule, especially these clocks with cylinders inside, Gierczyk said, as he opened a large clock cabinet. Look at this one. It was filled with sand and gravel and rocks from the late 1700s. It isn't just the rocks, added Sarah Mullen, administrative assistant at the Willard House. Take, for example, this musical clock. It features popular music between 1780 and 1800, music that now only exists inside these works. As for the incoming collection, Mullen couldn't contain her excitement. I don't even know of all of the pieces coming here, but there was one that has an inscription to a Mr. Nathaniel G.B. Dexter, Simon Willard's cousin. I just love the little pieces of history and the family connections. It's wonderful. The new collection and expansion are some years away from being completed, as the museum is just now entering the design and planning phase. But as Cheney said, what's a little more time? Willard clocks can be found around the country in a number of iconic places, including the base of the Franzoni statue in Congress, the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston, the Worcester Art Museum, and the Supreme Court, with each tick-tock standing the test of time. And thanks to Evelyn for her suggestion of the Willard House and Clock Museum for this edition of the Worcester County Wonders.
Would you like to hear news from Shrewsbury, Northborough, Southborough, and Westborough that you're not likely to hear on commercial television or radio? Then tune in to Audio Journal every Tuesday at 4 p.m.
And now for another fraud article, and this is actually from the Sunday Telegram as well. The title is, Don't Respond to Can You Hear Me? Phone Calls. Scammer Seeking Yes Response to Make Fraudulent Transactions. Is someone asking, can you hear me on the phone when you pick up? If so, hang up. It could be a scam. The Can You Hear Me scam has been targeting consumers for quite a few years. It's unclear exactly how the scam might play out, but consumer advocates, including the Better Business Bureau, say it's better to hang up. It's likely that the scammers are trying to get you to say yes and then record your voice, which can then be used or edited to make it seem like you authorized something that you didn't, according to a scam alert from the BBB. The BBB said it continues to receive reports to its scam tracker, the organization's tool that keeps an eye on reported scams across the country. Usually, the caller will hang up immediately after you respond to the question, can you hear me? The alert said. However, some consumers report that the calls can also be about banking, vacation packages, warranties, and Medicare cards, the BBB said. We encourage people to report this and other scams to BBB's scam tracker, BBB spokeswoman Melanie McGovern told USA Today. It helps to warn others that this activity is happening again. If you get a call, simply hang up without saying anything. So here's how the scam works. You get a call from someone who quickly asks you, "Can you hear me?" They want you to answer yes, which you would likely do instinctively, the BBB said. The call might even be awkward, or the person on the other line might say they're having trouble with their headset or that they'll call you back. But in fact, that person may be a robocall recording your conversation, and that yes answer you gave could later be edited to make it sound like you authorized a major purchase. That yes could also confirm the scammer got a real working number, which could mean further targeting for scams. If you receive one of these calls, here are some tips from the BBB. Use caller ID to screen calls and consider not answering numbers you don't know. If it's urgent, they'll call you back, the BBB said. Just hang up. Scammers will change their methods as the public catches on. So be on the lookout for other questions designed to get you to say yes. Make a note of the number and report it to the bbb.org/scam tracker to alert others. The BBB said it shares scam tracker information with government and law enforcement agencies, so all information is helpful. Join the Do Not Call registry, donotcall.gov, to limit telemarketing and sales calls. This might not cut down on scam calls, since they don't pay attention to the law, but it will certainly cut down on your overall calls. And finally, check your bank and credit card statements regularly for charges you didn't make. Also review your telephone and cell phone bills. Scammers could use your yes to authorize charges you didn't really okay. If you're worried, notify your bank and credit card company. They may be able to put an alert on your accounts for unauthorized transactions or even freeze your credit cards temporarily, the BBB said.
Are you or a loved one experiencing vision loss, unable to read your daily newspapers, feeling isolated because of blindness? If the answer is yes, Audio Journal can help. Live broadcasts of newspapers and other local publications enable blind, visually impaired, and print-disabled residents of Worcester County to connect with their communities. Newspaper readings, informative programming, education, and entertainment return you to the printed word your vision loss has denied you. For information about Audio Journal's free service, call 508-797-1117. Again, the number is 508-797-1117 or email info@audiojournal.org or go to our website at www.audiojournal.org. Audio Journal is a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
So our next fraud alert article also comes from the AARP Bulletin. Why criminals love cryptocurrency ATMs. These kiosks are everywhere, helping scammers steal cash from victims. Deceived by scammers posing as federal agents who convinced her that her bank accounts had been compromised, Elena Weissman fed more than $11,000 in $100 bills into a cryptocurrency ATM inside a cannabis dispensary last October in Santa Fe, New Mexico. "I remember the sound of the machine sucking up my money. Whoosh, ping," says Weissman, 77, an actor and a writer. Dispensary staffers gave her a chair so she could sit down for the long transaction. I was so upset I forgot about my sick dog in the car, she says. The criminals said the money would help the government protect her bank accounts. Before she fed in the cash, the ATM actually flashed warnings about scams. But I was instructed to lie, says Weissman, who had scanned a QR code provided by the scammers into the ATM. That code sent her money directly to their cryptocurrency wallet. It was the nightmare start of a series of schemes pulled off by the same criminals that ultimately cost Weissman $159,000. For years, gift cards, bank transfers, payment apps were the preferred way for scammers to get victims' money, as each has been widely accessible and the transactions mostly untraceable. But consumers, law enforcement, and the businesses behind these services have caught on to this, and protections are growing. So the scammer's solution, increasingly directing their victims to pay up the Weissman did at a crypto ATM. These often colorful kiosks are popping up in supermarkets, convenience stores, gas stations, restaurants, liquor stores, and even laundromats across the U.S. There are more than 49,000 crypto ATMs in the United States, up from only about 1,200 at the end of 2017. Although they are a legitimate way to convert real dollars into crypto dollars, itself a risky move given crypto's fast-changing value, crypto ATMs are used in government imposter scams, romance scams, grandparent scams, fraudulent online sales, employment scams, lottery scams, and other schemes, the law enforcement official said. Criminals enticed people to feed 22 million into the machines for government imposter scams alone in 2021, according to the Federal Trade Commission. And they were used in at least 35 million in fraudulent transactions in 2022, the Federal Reserve reports. Scammers love them for many reasons. For one, the kiosks quickly move victims' cash into tough-to-trace cryptocurrency accounts owned by criminals. Scammers take advantage of crypto because of the anonymity. Once the money's on the blockchain or public ledger, they can transfer and launder it in many ways. The company that owned the machine that Weissman used told her her money was untraceable. Crypto kiosks look like traditional bank ATMs, a similarity scammers exploit. Scammers often tell victims, oh, just go to the ATM at the convenience store. The victim doesn't even realize it's a crypto machine. Most crypto ATMs are licensed and used for their intended and legal purposes. And some, but not all, do warn the users about scammers. But scammers use this variability to their advantage, sending their marks to the unlicensed kiosks that don't meet federal registration requirements. Scam victims typically deposit cash in amounts ranging up to tens of thousands of dollars, according to law enforcement and the AARP Fraud Watch Network reports. A woman told me it took her 2 hours to deposit $80,000 in cash into a crypto ATM, says Amy Knofsinger, who is the director of fraud victim support for the AARP Fraud Network. Several states have passed laws that would tighten regulation of crypto ATMs to protect consumers. In the meantime, protect yourself by remembering that a request to pay via crypto ATM is a red flag that you may have stumbled into a scam. Last December, the Fairfax County Police Department warned their residents of a wave of scams targeting older adults that involved crypto ATM payments and had cost victims up to $25,000. legitimate businesses and government agencies don't take payment through crypto ATMs.
Would you like to hear news from Barry and Spencer that you're not likely to hear on commercial television or radio? Then tune in to Audio Journal every Monday at 6 p.m.
And now it's time for Central Mass by the Numbers. 162. The previous management of a Maine South Cafe plans to open a health food bistro at the former home of Maker to Maine at 162 Harding Street. A limited liability company named Tasty Experience Bistro received a license to sell food from the License Commission. Before becoming the brief home of the farm-to-table grocery store, Maker to Maine, the site had been the longtime location of the Harding Glass Company, which it closed in September of 2022. The new bistro plans to coffee, brunch, and dinner with a health focus and vegan offerings, along with some Brazilian options. The number 86, John Madison Davis, founding member and father of the Davis farmland in Sterling, died at his home on April 9th at 86. Davis's son Larry said the cause was acute myeloid leukemia. Davis and his sons, Larry and Doug, developed the idea of a petting zoo after a 1990 fire destroyed most of the farm's dairy operation. Opening in 1996, Davis farmland became a home for endangered animals, and it's been a crowd pleaser for thousands of children and adults since its inception. Subsequent additions to the farm include a spray park and the Davis Mega Farm Festival, which includes the famous Davis Mega Maze. And 54, the Rieta Flea Market opened for its 54th season April 14, a week later than originally scheduled due to last week's inclement winter weather. The multi-acre flea market will remain open every Sunday through November. Rieta officials said the flea market averages around 400 vendors and 1,000 shoppers each week, numbers that fluctuate depending on the weather. The property was the site of county and western jamborees organized by Ronald and Rita Levesque in 1966. And as the crowds attending the shows grew, vendors began setting up tables to sell merchandise, a tradition that continued even after the jamborees were no longer held. In 220, Sarah and Michael Lemovich hope to combine their love for aviation with Sarah's passion for cooking in May when they open the flight deck inside a diner at the Southbridge Municipal Airport, 2020 Airport Access Road. While the town owns the diner, the Lemoviches won the bid for leasing contract with the town in March, starting work to make the diner operational dating to 1958. The diner was manufactured in New Jersey and brought to the airport in the 1970s when a local restaurateur, Charles Latour, who often cooked for pilots out of hangars, hauled the diner to the airport. And number 295, in opening Sciuto's bookstore in February last year, Andrea and Zach Sciuto fulfilled a dream that the couple had shared since their college years, selling donated books out of a small Douglas space at 295 Main Street. But just over a year later, the Sciottos have decided to permanently close their bookshop, with Andrea citing inadequate foot traffic. The couple opened the bookshop with a collection of about 2,400 tiles, while the Sciottos are set to stay in the shop for the rest of April. May is still undecided, Andrea said. You have been listening to an older voice covering articles related to the senior community. This program is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or braille, please call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. This is Eileen, and with me is Vicki, and we thank you for listening today. We hope you have a good week.
Did you know that there are many different ways to listen to Audio Journal? You can go to our website, audiojournal.org, and stream us live. Or you can install the Audio Journal app on your iPhone or iPad. Or you can tell your smart speaker to play radio station Audio Journal on TuneIn. Or you can dial us at 1-712-770-1043 on your telephone. Or you can turn on your local cable access TV station. You can check our website, audiojournal.org, for the correct channel for your town. And finally, you can use one of our special receivers tuned to Audio Journal's frequency. And if you missed your favorite program, go to our website or the Audio Journal app and listen to podcasts of previously aired programs. Now, if you need assistance with any of these listening methods, please contact us at 508-797-1117 or email info@audiojournal.org. Audio Journal is a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
Please join Music Worcester as we start our Bach journey with the Worcester Chorus's performance of Bach's B Minor Mass on Sunday, May 5th at 4 p.m. in Mechanics Hall in Worcester. There will be a free pre-concert talk for ticket holders at 3 p.m. in Washburn Hall. Ticket prices are $55, $45, and $39, depending on the seat you choose. Student prices are $17.50, and youth are $7.50, plus the ordering fees. Go to musicworcester.org to purchase your tickets. Thank you, and I hope you can make it.
Welcome to Everyday Poems for Every Day, sponsored by Audio Journal. Our poem today is Remember by Christina Rossetti. Remember me when I am gone away, gone far away into the silent land, when you can no more hold me by the hand, nor I half turn to go, yet turning stay. Remember me when no more day by day you tell me of our future that you planned. Only remember me. You understand it will be late to counsel then or pray. Yet if you should forget me for a while and afterwards remember, do not grieve. For if the darkness and corruption leave a vestige of the thoughts that once I had, better by far you should forget and smile than that you should remember and be sad. You've been listening to Everyday Poems for Every Day, sponsored by Audio Journal. Read by me, Nikki Wichelow. Thanks so much for listening. May your life be filled with poetic wonder.
You are listening to Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.